everyone told us and told us marriage is hard work.
Hello and welcome to episode 34 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. And today we've got three new ones for you. We are going to talk about Annabelle, Gone Girl, and the New York Film Festival entry Inherent Vice. First off, I'm Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy and Angie.
Hey. Hello.
All right, so number one on the agenda today is Annabelle, and I'm going to talk about that one. So this is the Conjuring spinoff. It is essentially a prequel to The Conjuring, because if you remember, in The Conjuring, we meet Annabelle in that beginning opening sequence where she moves in with these nurses, and then they call in the Warrens. Well, this all goes down before Annabelle ever gets to their house, and it involves a couple. Their names are Mia and John, and she's pregnant, about to have a baby, and they live like this nice little quaint life in a suburban neighborhood. And then one night, something crazy goes down in the house next door, and that leads to something really weird happening to the doll, Annabelle, who was really creepy beforehand anyway, but we'll get to that. And
yeah, I wish the movie explained why anyone would let a doll that ugly in their house in the first place, because the thing is hideous before it's ever haunted.
It really paints them into a corner where the whole premise is like, can you believe this doll is haunted? And you're like, yes, absolutely, because that doll is hideous.
It would be just trying to if it wasn't haunted.
Make her cheeks rosier, and they're like, that's not the haunted version.
Well, like, and the thing is, though, it's like, even when he presents it, which is in the trailer, he, like, shows her the doll. He's like, I got this for you. And she's like, he's like, isn't it the one you wanted? She's like, it's just the one I wanted. She may not have been Southern, but that makes sense to me. Anyway, but then she says, it'll fit in perfect. And she puts the doll on a shelf where it is three times the size of every other porcelain doll she has. It looks totally out of place. And it's like, this is at the moment where the doll is not supposed to be insanely creepy. Like, I am all for creepy doll movies, but you need the doll to look like, at least in the very first installment, to look believably like a doll someone might have in their house, because that makes it scary.
Who has these dolls? Because she has a whole ton of other dolls that aren't dirty and creepy looking, but they're still, like, unsettling. I wouldn't want them in my house.
Well, I don't think it's uncommon for people to collect, antique porcelain dolls. Like, that's not weird, but most of the time when you see it, they look like things that you might conceivably want to have in your house. Like, they're not, like, terrifying. I've seen, like, people who have dolls that look, like, kind of creepy, but this one looks, like, overtly scary.
I will tell you, I would not put any doll she had in that baby's room in my house.
Oh, there's one that giggles that made me laugh, because my mom was actually, like, a big proponent of, when I was a little girl, she, like, got me a bunch of porcelain dolls because, my mom really wanted, like, a girly child, and, like, I didn't understand why you would have dolls you couldn't play with. It was, like, a constant conflict. But, like, and they were weird-looking, because most of them, like, the heads are too big, and their smiles are, like, which maybe that's why I smile that way in photos. Maybe we've just unlocked that mystery.
Wow, we're getting into some deep psychological shit here today, huh?
Welcome to Popcorn and Prosecco / Christy's Therapy. No, but so, like, I understand that, like, porcelain dolls can be kind of inherently creepy, but, like, this one's just kind of a bridge too far, and because it's so big, like, anytime anyone picks it up, it's like they're lifting a small child. And it's like, I know that sounds like such a weird thing to harp on, but, like, they really painted themselves in a corner where, like, there are things in this movie that I genuinely found scary and upsetting, which Angie can attest to as she repeatedly reached over and kind of patted my hand and was like, it's gonna be okay. But the doll was never that, because the doll is so silly looking.
Well, the doll worked in the first movie, because what was that, a 5-minute opening sequence, and it wasn't really as much about the doll as it was introducing the audience to the world, and it was a shtick. The doll's like a fun little gag, and it works for that long. That doll could not carry a whole movie, and all they could really do with the doll, because, not really a spoiler, but the doll doesn't do anything.
I think people need to know that. This doll never comes to life.
The only thing that they do with the doll is, I think the most movement she does, well, I'm not going to spoil one thing, but the second most movement she does is when, like, she drops on the floor and, like, you see her fall into frame, and it's, like, supposed to be, oh my god. But otherwise, it's legit just, like, the camera covering the doll by moving this way and that way and up and down. And, you know, that's not scary. That's not the scary part in the movie. The doll never scared me. Other things made me jump a little.
Yeah, like the opening invasion scene that we were alluded to, which again is in the trailer, the home invasion stuff really freaked me out. And then later when the main character, when Mia's home by herself.
Do you think the name Mia, like, has any significance in this movie?
How could it have significance? I don't get it.
Oh, God, this movie went so hard to be Rosemary's Baby. Like, they try there's to dress
scene,
him like
there's
it.
Even, like, a basement scene that's like the one in Rosemary's Baby, where it looks exactly the same.
Yeah. I can't decide how I feel about that basement scene, if I was laughing at it or having fun with it.
Both, I think. Because there were parts of that genuinely, and me and the guy next to me who I didn't know, like, screamed during part of that scene. But then, like, the end part of that scene is just so silly that I was just like, stop it. Anyway, but, like, that's the thing. There are elements, and without getting into spoilers, there are other elements in the movie that are scary and really work for me. But my big problems with this is the doll is dumb, and the main characters, like, you have, like, Bobo January Jones, whose name is Annabelle Wallace, whatever. She looks like January Jones and Diana Argan had, like, a boring baby or sister or whatever. And then there's, like, Bobo Eddie Redmayne.
Yeah, well, my big problem with her is that she's a terrible actress. Like, so much of the movie is just kind of her, like, being vaguely creeped out by the doll, that if you can't make that work, then this movie is just really boring.
That's why I liked the guy who played the husband more. You know, it wasn't a well-written character by any means. I thought he was incredibly condescending. He had no layers and all that, and he had the worst dialogue ever, but she was just so blah and lifeless, and he was so animated that I was liking watching him more than I was her.
But I think he's a huge dick in the movie. Well, to the point where I was, like, suspecting that to be a plot point, and it's not. Like,
these are very poorly written characters overall.
No, totally.
Well, can we talk about one of the other poorly written characters? There's a magical Negro in this movie.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. Like, and it's like, and I hate
played
that
by Alfred Woodard, like, by the way.
Literary-wise, if you've never heard that term before and you think we're just being terrible, it's a literary term basically meaning, like, that
it means,
colored people are magic. It's really
it
offensive.
It means, like, there's, like, a mystical person of color whose job it is to help the, you know, pretty white protagonist, which is exactly the purpose that this actress serves, and it's so...
I didn't want it to be that. I really didn't. I hoped there was going to be some interesting twist. But because she's the only person of color in the movie worth noting, I think she's the only one, period. But she's certainly the only one I remember. And because of the way this movie goes in its third act, I was like, really?
She also just steps in. The third act is the absolute worst. But it's also the way that she steps in. It's completely unmotivated. She happens to just spot her and be like, I'm going to befriend that new one.
Yeah,
for no reason at all. And, like, what significance did it have that she owned the bookstore? I thought maybe they'd uncover a little more.
I thought she was at least going to be, like, an occult bookstore owner.
That's what I was thinking.
Owner.
Like, no, he had some sort of information that nobody else had, but she's just like, here's all these, like, devil kind of books, so let's see what we can find.
We'll just load up your pram with them. Like, ugh, it's just so disappointing, especially because, like, that's the other thing I found personally disappointing is that Blumhouse Productions, their thing has been that they take, like, $3 million and they make a movie that is really smartly written, and even though it's on a low budget, it's really scary, it's good about building atmosphere, and it has great actors in it. And this one is, like, none of those things. Well, it has a low budget, and that's kind of the only thing it has in common. The script does not feel nearly as well thought out. It feels like a huge ripoff of Rosemary's Baby. And, like, the acting, aside from I do like Alfred Woodard, I think she was good. And the guy that played the priest I liked. Oh, and that kid.
Good. This isn't a Blumhouse film. This is Warner Brothers.
Oh, is it?
I mean, it feels obviously like a Blumhouse, but this is all Warner Brothers. The Conjuring was Warner Brothers as well.
Oh, God, you're right. You're right. You're right. I'm completely wrong. I was thinking because of... Right. You're right.
It's easy to make the error, considering, like, this is in their wheelhouse anyway. But who are you going to reference? Which actor?
Oh, I like the little boy, actually. The baby...
I was going to say the same thing. I'm looking at his IMDb page now. We all need to watch out for Gabriel Bateman, who is credited as Little Boy, because he is the star of this movie.
Yeah, because that's the thing.
He's in for about two minutes.
Yeah, he's in one scene, but we all thought it was going to go somewhere, because one, he's very interesting, and two, it was an interesting dynamic that he had with boring Mia, and then we just never see him again, and I was just like, well, what are we doing? So my apologies to Blumhouse, because you're right, I'm sorry, guys, it's been a long week. It was not Blumhouse. We cannot put this on their, like, scorecard as a fail. Mm-hmm. It's just...
Dear God, I just hope that The Conjuring 2 is better than this, because that's going to really upset me, because Conjuring was my number one movie of last year, so I was really looking forward to this.
It was a really good,
really disappointed
movie, and it's very disappointing that this is, like, the next thing that they've decided
to do. It is so formulaic. Like, you have seen everything that happens in this movie in another film before.
Yeah,
it's been better done with
better props and, like, better actors and better dialogue.
Yeah, I mean, that's the bummer. And, like, just, like, Alfred Woodard, it made me so sad. I was just like, you deserve so much better than what this movie gives you to do. It's so lame. Like, when it got to the end, I was literally like
a horrible actress.
Well, the ending. You guys will see. There's no way you could miss what we're talking about when we're like hinting at the ending, because it's not very well earned, and it's kind of ridiculous.
There's like so many things that could have been interesting, and then they did what they did.
Yep.
Yeah.
So what would you guys say? Is Annabelle worth seeing at all?
Skip it. Even if you love The Conjuring, here's the thing you need to know. We never see the Warrens. This movie has nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
It's literally just about the doll. I don't know. I mean, it didn't help that I saw another better horror movie like 2 days before I saw this one. We're going to talk about it in a different podcast. But yeah, overall, there are better horror movies that have more to offer, or at least like more interesting things.
So. Yeah, it's October. Don't waste your money on this. There's more coming out. But I don't think it's a harmless watch if you pass it on TV or something. You know, it's kind of like a walk around the house, do other things while glancing over. It's some of it's good fun. All right, so on to the next one. Angie, you've got Gone Girl?
Yes, so this one's kind of tricky to talk about because I'm sure that even if you don't know anything else about it, you've probably heard people talk about like how twisty it is and like how like you can't give away the big spoiler and et cetera, et cetera. But basically, it's about Ben Affleck and Rosamund Pike play a married couple who used to live in New York City and now they live in Missouri. And on the morning of their 5th anniversary, Ben Affleck comes home and that he notices that the house is in disarray and that his wife is nowhere to be seen, and it all looks very suspicious, so he calls the cops, and then they open up an investigation about what happened to her, and pretty quickly he becomes the prime suspect in her disappearance. You know, there's some flashbacks that show, like, what their relationship was like beforehand, but, you know, the meat of the movie is kind of figuring out, like, what happened. So it's David Fincher directed this from a book by Gillian Flynn, which you have probably seen everyone reading on the subway over the last 2 years, me included. And I thought that it was such a good combination of just the material, the director, the cast. Ben Affleck in this movie is, even if you don't like Ben Affleck normally, and I have always felt like he's like a decent actor, but not a great one, but this is the role he's been training his whole life to play this fucking role. He is perfect in it.
I felt like that about everybody in this movie. This is one of the best cast movies I've seen in a really long time.
But I was mostly impressed by Ben Affleck because as soon as they cast him, I was like, that is perfect casting, and I was not disappointed. I was just like, holy shit, I can't think of anyone else who is better suited for this part.
So what's interesting to me, and we're going to talk for this section in a non-spoiler way, but what was interesting to me, Angie and I both read the book, so we went in knowing what was going to happen. Perry did not.
I highly recommend going in the way that I did. I mean, obviously, if you read the book, you can't take it back. But, I mean, it was just kind of one holy shit moment after the next. There's not just one big twist. I feel like it just kept progressing in this way that I was not expecting at all.
Yeah,
like,
I love it.
It's such a different story. Like, there's elements that feel familiar, but they always do something fresh and put a different spin on it. I was loving every single second of this movie to the point where I was, like, dying to see what happened next.
Yeah, I actually am really impressed by this one. It's not exactly the movie I imagined, having read the book. I'll be frank, I wanted a little more Fincher Fight Club type style, where I wanted it to be a little more visually explosive, but I understand why it's not, because within the film there's a very sharp criticism of how we as a society kind of feast on tragedy and how like news covers it and stuff like that. So they wanted it to have this kind of realistic feel. But there are elements of visual manipulation in the film that I don't want to get into. But I agree. The casting in this is actually outstanding. And it's just amazing how well the characters not only fit their roles, but our perception of the actors playing the characters. Like, they knew what they were doing, down to the way they cast the blurred lines girl, which, because it's a plot point, I'm not going to get into it. But like, if you're looking at her, you're like, where have I seen your boobs before? Spoilers, blurred lines.
Tyler Perry was one of the ones that, I remember when his casting was announced, everyone was just like, we're all like, question mark? Like, why? Okay.
Oh, he was great. He's so hard to look at Tyler Perry. You know, actually, that's the case with most of this cast. It's so hard to look at them and not see who they are, like their star persona.
That's exactly why Ben Affleck was so perfect.
Totally gone.
That's actually why it works, though, because we have these like attachments to them, with the exception, I think, of Rosamund Pike, because I don't think most people know her.
She is hands down my favorite performance in this movie, though.
She's incredible.
Did you say it, that you wanted her to get an Academy Award nomination? Because I freaking do, too. Yes, I am on that campaign.
And, like, it's hard to – we're going to have to get into spoilers to talk about why, but there is a scene in particular that Perry and I agreed was our favorite, and it's also
that
the
might,
most
I think that might be
scene.
One of my favorite scenes of, like, the entire year. I'll never in my life forget what happens there.
It will be a nightmare scene for people for years, decades, generations. It's so upsetting.
It's a nightmare scene, but it's, like, so beautifully nightmarish at the same time. Like, you just freeze frame anything in that, and, I mean, you'd have to be a sick person. But it's, like, wall art. It's gorgeous.
Is it? I don't want to get into spoilers, but is it that thing that happens really late in the movie that kind of sets up the conclusion?
Yeah.
Okay. I know what you're talking about.
I also really liked the two cops, especially...
Kim Dickens and Patrick.
Yeah, I thought she was fantastic.
Kim Dickens
and, like,
is amazing.
I wasn't really, like, too aware of her beforehand, but I took note in this. And I actually took note in the... because they released one of the interrogation scenes as a clip leading up to the release. And while I was watching that before I'd even seen the movie, I was like, wow, like, you are interesting. I'm listening to what you say because, like, you're so captivating. And sure enough, in the movie... like, really great character. I loved her interactions with Ben Affleck. Because, like, that's really important to the character and unraveling the mystery and the whole game of, you know, did he do it, did he not do it, who's wrong, who's right, all that kind of stuff.
Can we talk about how just, like, this movie is also just fucking fun. Like, I think that, you know, you're like, oh, it's a dark thriller.
It's a
like,
really
directed by David Fincher. Like, you know, you think it's going to be, like, grim and, like, serious. And, you know, it's pretty fucked up. It is grim, but it has a really good sense of humor that kind of shows up in, like, weird places.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, like, every time you think the story can't get more fucked up, they do something even crazier, and you're, you know, I think, like, as
you know, reminds me,
didn't know what was coming. She was just like, you're just like, what? And it's
you
just,
know what it reminds
fun.
Me of, but I feel like I'm probably gonna be the only one to throw this comparison out there. It reminded me of The Call, the Halle Berry movie where she played a 911. Bear with me, because in that movie, like. Things happen in that movie that are just so, like, they fit within the story, but they're so bonkers, and they're so violent, they're so crazy that it's just so much fun to watch. Like, it's very pulpy, you know? It's, like, trashy and seedy and sexy and fucked up, and it's, you know, this is an R-rated movie just to the nines, and it embraces it, and it goes with it, and it's really fun to see the sick story that the, you know, I mean, this is from the guy who did Seven. Like, it's sick like Seven, but with a really... cheeky sense of humor.
It's really funny. I laughed out loud quite a few times in this movie.
Yeah.
One really small funny moment is, like, you've seen the part in the trailers where, like, Kim Dickens is, like, very skeptical of Ben Affleck. She's like, you don't know her blood type? And then after he leaves the room, Patrick Fugit is like, oh my god, should I know my wife's blood type? She's like, fuck no.
Yeah, it's just,
it's just
thing
like
to
a
kind
small
of, like...
moment that was just, like, really funny and kind of made the movie feel more real in a way.
Which is actually funny you mentioned real, because when she said that to Ben Affleck in this accusatory way, Angie turned to me and asked me if I knew my husband's blood type, which I said, no, of course not. And then she said
my...
she didn't know hers either. And
when
then
I my own when blood I wrote type. That clip up on Collider, you can go check my first paragraph. It's like, I don't know my own blood type. Should I go look that up? I think my blood type and, like, my spouse or significant other's blood type is a different story. I should know my blood type, right?
I think I have a suspicion of what mine is, but it's not.
That makes me feel better. Thank you.
I don't think anyone actually knows. It was really funny. But one other thing I wanted to talk about was, so Fincher, not generally known as a guy that gets women, but this movie, I thought, I don't want to get spoilery, so I will stay very vague, but I thought that this movie... I was surprised at how well it nails the experience of being a woman that lives in our modern day society.
Yeah. And I know that if you haven't read the book, you might wonder what the fuck we're talking about. Just see the movie and I think you'll get a sense of it. There's a monologue from the book that's very lengthy in the book. And it's been cut down considerably in the movie, but I think it was cut down in just the right way. For one thing, the author, Gillian Armstrong, actually... No, Gillian
Flynn.
Sorry, that's someone else. Gillian Flynn... she adapted the book herself into a novel, and I really like, or she adapted the book into, guys, I'm sorry, it has been a long week, I'm pulling it
well,
together.
Well, we had a very long morning, you'll find out why soon.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
She wrote like screenplay.
Yeah, she wrote, exactly, yes. And she did such a great job with it. There's like a really, the things they cut out, it makes sense they cut out. There's, I would say, that I would argue there's a little more they probably could have stood to cut out. But, you know, they really made good use of what they needed to tell this story. One thing that is a bit of a shame is in the book, because of the diaries that Amy writes, a good chunk of the book is also from her point of view. And we don't get as much of her point of view in the movie. However, I think Amy still dominates this story, and Rosamund Pike is going to get all of the Oscar talk where I'll, like,
I
Ben
hope
Affleck
she
probably
does.
I feel like there's...
She deserves it.
Both with the book and the movie, there's a lot of debate over the character of Amy. She's very, people have opinions about her. But, like, whether you like her or not, I think she's one of the most memorable female characters that...
Well, I think everything about this movie is, like, the most memorable thing. Because we'll get into the next one, but... With this movie, like, I've seen quite a few movies in between, like, now and since I went when I saw Gone Girl, and I can't believe how many scenes from that movie I can recall, whereas the one that I saw this morning, I could maybe tell you what happened in 4 or 5 scenes of a 2.5-hour movie. It's just mind-blowing, and I can't pick a favorite. Like, every time I start talking about it, I'm like, that one. But, like, no, that one. There's just so many, like, huge, nice, neat, little, well-constructed moments that you could appreciate, like, on their own and, you know, in the entire picture as well.
And it's a really fun ride. And I would especially say if you hadn't read the book, I think, you know, you might be more inclined to want to see it again. But having said that, I want to see it again just to kind of notice.
Oh, I'm dying to see it
again. Yeah, I read the book. I want to see it again. Oh, and if you have read the book and there was still any question, the ending is the same. Because I feel like people keep having...
Mostly.
People have been going back and forth, but essentially it's the same.
Yeah.
There's some movie tweaks, but
it's not going to be some riot wild rewrite. Like, if you know what happened in the book, you're roughly going to know what happens here. And, also just a shout out to Casey Wilson, who is great as Amy's best friend.
Another piece of perfect casting. Like, another thing where, like, what we know about Casey Wilson and the kind of characters we're used to seeing her play works so much in, like, favor of this movie. Honestly, it's just, the casting could not be better.
I like the sister, too. The sister is a great character.
Carrie Coon.
Yeah, she was fantastic. Well, I like her.
She's supposed to be twins with Ben Affleck. They're 9 years apart. I looked this up. And it seemed like, and like I tweeted about this, but I was like, that just seems like exactly the kind of thing that Amy would have sneered at, right? Like, of course, Ben Affleck and a girl who is 9 years younger than him are supposed to be the same age.
I did like that Ben Affleck puts on a little bit of punch for this role, because it's like he's basically a husband who's kind of given up on himself a little bit, and so
it's one of those things that like make this movie so great is that like it's such a minor detail, but the thing is like he still looks good, he's still Ben fucking Affleck, you know, and he's still like in pretty good shape.
Literally.
But he looks like a guy that was in shape once and kind of like let himself go a bit, and it works so well. It works so.
And Amy is still just gorgeous, so like
Rosamund Pike is.
This is not a sitcom, so that is a plot point.
Rosamund Pike is, I guess she's the one that, as you pointed out, we knew the least, and she has the most to gain from this movie in that sense, and wow, after this, I expect her to be, like, at the top of every casting director's wish list.
Yeah, I would hope so.
If there is any
January,
justice,
all
we're
going to be covering is casting stories for Rosamund Pike. It's going to be like,
I hope she becomes a new Jennifer Lawrence, where every time there's a big role, like, every trade is being like, and they want this person.
Yeah.
Right. But anyway, we should wrap up for now and move on to the next thing.
Clearly, we highly recommend Gone Girl, I think, all around, right?
Yeah, it's outstanding. Go see it immediately.
All right, Christy, have fun.
Just be aware if you're going to take a date to Gone Girl, that might get weird.
But if you want... Yeah, all right. Yeah.
Okay. We're moving on to Inherent Vice. Which I just realized that each of us is kind of dressed thematically. We're like, I'm matching this outfit. Perry, you kind of look like Amy at one point in Gone Girl. Angie, you're wearing white like Annabelle. So cheers to us for accidental costumes.
You actually switched me and Perry, but yeah, that works.
Did I?
Well,
goddamn. With that in mind, let's move ahead to Inherent Vice, which thankfully there's a really helpful synopsis in this booklet, because Perry and I struggled with this one. Okay. When Private Eye, Doc Sportello's ex-old lady, suddenly out of nowhere shows up with a story about her current billionaire land developer boyfriend who she just happens to be in love with, and a plot by his wife and her boyfriend to kidnap the billionaire and throw him in a loony bin, well, easy for her to say. That's literally
no, Angie, your face is really accurate. That is essentially the opening scene of the movie, and I mean, I just didn't... The opening scene ended, and I'm like, uh-oh. Like, I'm in trouble. But, like, maybe they'll explain shit later.
Nope, they don't. So here's the thing.
Spoilers.
Inherent Vice is the latest from P.T. Anderson. Yeah, spoilers. This movie doesn't make sense. So it's the latest from P.T. Anderson. It's based on the book by Thomas Pynchon. And it's about this detective played by Joaquin Phoenix, who is a stoner and a doctor and a private detective and a general screw-up. And
he's not a doctor.
Isn't
right?
he?
I think they just call him Doc and he works out of that office.
I thought that was a clinic. Is he not a doctor?
I think the other person, that's the other person's clinic, and he just runs his private eye stuff out of there. So, this is the problem.
I don't know.
Okay, so maybe he's not a doc. Main point is he's a stoner in a private eye, and these two things make for what some people are calling stoner noir, which I don't think I like very much because I didn't understand what was happening for a large percentage of this movie. It was very frustrating. His girlfriend shows up, she tells him all this stuff, and then she's like, she wants him to do something, but it's unclear what, and he just starts going places, and it's unclear what he's trying to do, and then he keeps meeting more and more and more and more and more and more characters, and like, sometimes you understand who they are, sometimes it's unclear, sometimes he gets framed for murder, sometimes he gets framed for drug stealing. It's just so confounding, and the movie, like, is very long, and there's like huge swaths where I was just trying to figure out what was happening. So even though there are fun things in this movie, like it's a very kind of zany movie, especially for P.T. Anderson. Like,
it's got a great soundtrack.
It does have a great soundtrack.
How long is the movie?
Isn't it like 2:44? Wait, it's fucking long. 1:46, I think.
Did I just freeze?
1:46 isn't that bad.
Maybe I'm wrong. 1:48. It's 2.5 hours.
Oh, I thought you meant one hour and 46 minutes, and I was like, that's not long.
No, it was long, and it's just, like, it's so hard, because, like, I tried to just stop caring that I didn't understand it and just enjoy the colors and the acting and things, but, like, it is really hard to watch, a movie that's all about a mystery when you really can't follow what's happening. Not like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen. Like, I have no idea what we're even trying to solve.
There's nothing that kills a movie faster for me than not understanding what's going on. Because really, I mean, isn't the whole point of going to the movies to be able to, like, experience a story and, like, step into someone else's life? And, I mean, there were moments of that. There's a couple little, like, I want to call them almost like vignettes or short films within this film that played well enough, like, on their own. But the whole point of him meeting all these people is that it's supposed to reveal new and new clues to solve the grand problem. But, like, to be honest, I'm not really sure what the big problem was and what his whole mission turned into. Nor am I really clear on what happens to the girlfriend.
Well, like, in the end, I was genuinely confused with major plot points. Characters just vanish. They vanish. And, like, there's one character that Perry and I thought was a hallucination who's apparently a person. They tell you that in the very last scene, which has no relevance on the plot at all. It's just, like, it's done in this whole kind of thing. Okay, so here's an example. In, like, The Big Lebowski, he has a mystery to solve. And it's, like, even if you don't really care about the mystery, the dude is fun enough to hang out with that who cares. I don't like Doc. I don't think Doc is interesting, and I get the whole slapsticky thing they're doing, and there are things that I occasionally chuckled at, but that's because, you know, I like, slapstick's funny. Like, you don't really need a context for it, necessarily. And, like, I just had nothing to hang on to with this movie, and I was just so confounded by it. And at the end, I was just like, well, now what? Like, and I think it exacerbated, admittedly. Perry and I stood in line for about 2 hours just to get into this movie, because that's just how this
rain?
This was just, it was just like a rough morning. Like, my morning consisted of me getting up at 6, driving from Long Island to New York City, standing in line in the rain for an hour, then waiting in our seats for an hour, then sitting through a 2.5-hour movie that I didn't like, and then sitting through a pointless half-hour press conference, all on an empty stomach, too.
Even talk. Joaquin Phoenix came to the press conference and refused to say anything.
So speaking of Joaquin Phoenix, it has a really good cast. How is the cast?
I think the performances are fine. Like, I believed all these people as their characters, but there's just so far that can take you when you don't really know, you know, what their motivations are, what their goals are. Like, how are we supposed to care? And for me, I think I could have liked Doc if I knew, you know, what he was capable of and what he was trying to achieve, but because I couldn't, like, he seemed like a nice, funny, harmless guy, even though he's high half the time. I mean, that was a problem. And, like, Josh Brolin's character, too. Like, what the fuck was he so angry about all the time?
Well, Josh Brolin plays a cop character named Bigfoot, who's also an actor who also likes to, like, deep-throat frozen bananas. Just because...
Like, that was, like, the ultimate eyebrow raise, Angie.
It was so weird. You're just like, there's so much stuff in this movie that you're like, wait, why is this happening?
The only parts I liked Owen Wilson's storyline. That was actually, that might be one of the most complete storylines. He's in some sort of, like, fuck, now I can't even describe, like, what kind of situation he's in. What would you call that place? What?
Oh, well, he's, like, in a, like, a rehab clinic, but he's an informant.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like he had to leave his old life behind and fake his death, and this is all revealed very early on, so I feel like we're fine saying that.
He's not,
but, like,
in the
there's actually a
clinic,
narrative.
Though.
That's what it is.
That's the completely different building. The rehab clinic was, like, this big, grand, white building, and then he was in, like,
that's
a
where he was
house.
In the white robes.
Okay, so even the plot that you guys liked because you thought you understood it, you're incredibly confused about the specifics.
Clearly.
Oh, God. I feel like that's why I feel so brain dead now. Like, I tried so hard to make sense of this movie,
yeah.
And I couldn't. I was just
this
so
This movie's
confounded.
A workout. I was trying really hard. I don't know if you noticed, I was, like, shoving gum in my mouth, like, trying to keep myself alert and trying. And, like, if you look at my notes, the whole first page of my notes is, like tiny little details, like, things that, you know, might not have been a big deal, but would have just helped me piece something together. That was really awkward because I was looking at Christy. A hand just went into frame.
Sorry.
It's okay. I found it funny. But at one point in my notes, all of a sudden there's scribbles all over the page because I started to get lazy and not care anymore. And I kept thinking, you know, I kept checking my watch too. I checked my watch like 500 times during this movie. And when it was a half hour left, I'm like, all right, you know, maybe if I try really hard again in the third act right now, I'll leave with something.
No. I kept thinking that, like, something would click into place and then everything else would make sense to me.
That's
and it
what
just...
I was hoping.
No.
Because that at least would have made it, like, somewhat satisfying.
Well, what's funny, and I feel like the people marketing this movie understand how hard it is to understand, because this book here is actually, like, an in-depth explanation of who all of the characters are. And, like, it tells you stuff they don't say
did
in the movie.
Did you see the cartoon at the back?
I did. I don't understand what that is.
I don't
is.
Understand what it is either.
I think it's an ass.
You don't even
farting.
Understand the marketing.
No. Well, it looks like a walrus.
Well, do you think that if you
I
saw
think,
this movie...
Oh, I thought it was an ass. Is that not an ass?
An ass?
It looks like a butt. Like a Grim Reaper butt face.
I thought it's like a walrus tooth thing. Tusk. Whatever the hell they are. Tusk. That's what this looks like.
Oh, God damn it.
There's one character in this book that I, before we started recording, I said to Christy, is this person in the movie?
Yeah, like, that's the, and I mean, Perry's right. When we came out of the movie, or they did a press conference right after, and the actors are talking about certain scenes, and I was like, did I see that scene? Like, I was actually having a hard time remembering the movie, because the thread of the plot, and I'm being generous calling it that, is so, like, random that, like, I couldn't fucking link things together in my head.
Also, like, something was a cover for this, but this business was really about that. It's like everything was not as it seems the entire
yeah.
movie.
At the
and
end,
they never really clarified what it was.
Well, and also because the main character is a stoner, and, like, he is maybe hallucinating some of the time, so, like, it's just, the thing is, this and Gone Girl both have scenes that potentially lie to the audience. I'll say that. In Gone Girl, when those scenes are revealed, I was like, oh, that's exciting and that's fun. And, like, admittedly, I had an inside track because I had read the book, so I kind of had an idea of what was fake and what was not. In this, it's unclear what's fake and what's not, and ultimately, I just didn't care. Like, I was just like, I don't... Like,
well,
for me,
you get
Katie
to the
Anderson,
point where you're so tired. I mean, I was just so tired by the end of this movie. I could have sat in that seat and just napped the rest of the day.
Yeah,
and not because I got up so early, because trying to understand that movie was a total workout.
No, totally. I think, yeah, I don't. It's just very exhausting.
I want to ask, because I didn't see this movie. Is the experience of watching it any fun? Like, because I get the complaint that, like, you know, you don't understand the characters or the story, but I mean,
there's a little part of me that wants to see it again just to see if I could do a better job. The most frustrating thing about this movie to me is that it, like, makes me, like, mad at myself. Like, am I not smart enough to understand that? That's why I really don't like when I understand stories. Because, like, I think I'm a smart enough person that I should be getting this. But, like,
which I, well, I feel like
after the films that we went through in New York Film Festival recently, I'm, like, starting to feel like I'm, like, stupid or something. What's going on?
I feel like we should also point out that during the press conference, P.T. Anderson kind of admitted that this
I wrote the quote down. I'm actually putting it in my review.
It's, like, purposely confusing.
I saw The Big Sleep, and it made me realize I could not follow any of it, and it didn't matter because I just wanted to see what was going to happen next. Which is not
but
necessarily the case in his movies. I think he does a little bit.
What happens next?
A little bit. Not enough to carry two and a half hour
movie. I think that's the idea, is that you're supposed to be caught up I think you're supposed to be so caught up in the world that, like, figuring it out is supposed to be fun instead of frustrating. But, like, I'm not a big stoner movie person to begin with. Like, yeah, like, I like The Big Lebowski. There are stoner movies I enjoy, but as a genre, it's never been my thing. So for P.T. Anderson to do a stoner movie was, one, weird to me, and two, I'm going to say boring, honestly. Like, there are parts of it that are really funny. There's, like, there's some slapstick. There's some scenes between Joaquin Phoenix and Owen Wilson that I liked. And
I like the Martin Short stuff.
That was all really weird to me. I don't know what to do with that.
I thought it was really weird, but it, like, felt like it was, like, of another movie. So I'm like,
it was, yeah.
This is kind of entertaining.
That's true, actually. I'll give it that. But, like, yeah, I didn't want to be in this world. I didn't want to be, running around with this stoner. Like, it just felt like an episode of Scooby-Doo to me. It was like, what do we do next? And I was like, I've never liked Scooby-Doo. I'm just throwing down all kinds of bombs, guys. I'm not into inherent advice. I'm not into Scooby-Doo. Bring it.
I don't understand how this thing is going to get a wide release and play well at all. I really don't this is not a wide release movie. It's getting a limited release on December 12th, and then it goes wide January 9th.
Yeah, it's getting the December release so that it can do the Oscars thing, which, like, I just genuinely, this has
what
to
Oscar?
Be weird for the Academy.
I don't.
Maybe a screenwriting screenplay, or like a screenwriting office, so someone.
No,
because I'm saying somebody might be like, oh, well, it was so, like,
if anything, it'll probably be in talks for, like, costumes or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know, it's even hard. It's like, even the Joaquin Phoenix stuff, it just feels like such a shtick now that he plays these weird gonzo characters. Like, it's not, I don't know.
Well, his behavior
is
during
the... Is he the new Johnny Depp?
No, because Johnny Depp still
seems friendly.
This
did remind me a lot of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And as much as I like Terry Gilliam, that's not a movie I give a shit about either.
This shouldn't affect my, you know, my opinion on the movie, but it did really upset me when they were passing the microphone down the line and every single actor was giving their 2 cents on a certain topic and they passed it to him and he's just like, no.
He was the last one. He was the only
Literally. After people waited 2 hours in line to see your movie, sat through a 2.5-hour movie, the least you could do is just say something for the people. Some of the people in the audience were there to cover the press conference.
Yeah.
And you left them with nothing.
And I also said to Perry,
for that matter.
Yeah, and I also said to Perry, I think it's really bad form of him to show up to the press conference and not say anything.
Yeah, then just don't come at all.
Yeah, because the other thing is that, like, if he says anything, because he so rarely says anything, it would have gotten this movie more attention. Now, maybe it doesn't need it, but, like, to me, that bothered me.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm throwing down, I have issues with Inherent Vices.
So, you don't like the movie. You don't like the movie, did a horrible job marketing it. Basically, thumbs down from both of you.
Yeah, I can't recommend this.
No. I mean, I'm sure there are P.T. Anderson fans out there. They're going to love it no matter what. I admit, I like some of his stuff a lot, and some of it I just don't get, and I'm going to put this in the I don't get it, and I don't care category.
This is probably at the bottom of my P.T. Anderson pile.
Well, at least there was Gone Girl this week, guys.
That is true. We got one really good one. All right, so that is it for episode 34. We're going to see you next week, but if you want to keep up with us in the meantime, you know, go to YouTube. We have our YouTube channel. We are on iTunes. Please go on there, watch our show, comment, rate us, all of that. And then we are also on Twitter at Popcorn Prosecco. We have our own website, popcornprosecco.com. You can find us on Facebook, and the three of us are all over the web as well. Angie, where can viewers find you?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
Christy?
I'm at Christy Puchko on Twitter, and I can be found all over the web, but you can find highlights of my work at decadentcriminals.com.
And I'm at P. Nemiroff on Twitter, and you can find my writing on collider.com. Thank you guys so much for watching, and we'll see you next week.
Bye, everybody.
I had nothing to do with the disappearance of my wife.